Thank you so much. It is such an honor to be here with you. I am just so thankful for the invitation to come and to share God's word with you this morning. This was actually my first time ever being here at Christ Church. And so as I was preparing to come, of course, I had to pull out Google Maps and punch in the address to figure out where I was going. And of course, nowadays, these navigational websites, they don't just give us directions. Through things like Street View, you can actually virtually view a place you've never been. And so when I was on the site, I was able to look at your entrance. I was even able to look at your auditoriums. I think if I had poked around long enough, I could have probably figured out where the restrooms were. But it was fascinating to see this place and such a beautiful building you have. Like, I wonder, have you ever Googled your own home on this Street View? Anybody ever do that? Okay, if you haven't, you're gonna have to do that when you get home. You can see your own house, and since I kind of creeped on your house all week, I thought I would show you my house. This is my townhome, and as Tracy said, I am local. I live about 35 minutes away, and when I looked up the street view of my home, it said that this picture was taken in September of 2022, and I wonder if I was home, and I didn't notice the van going past taking a picture of my house, and it's pretty cool, but also maybe a little creepy, right? But one thing I learned that I didn't know before about this street view is there's actually a time travel feature with it. You can actually go back and see all the pictures that Google has captured of your house over the years. And so I clicked on the first picture Google captured of my house, and it was from September of 2012. And I noticed that the tree in my front yard was a lot smaller, and the truck in the driveway, I have no idea who that is because I wasn't living there at the time. But something interesting about this time travel feature is that people are using it to try to hold on to a moment in time when a loved one who is no longer with them might have been captured by one of Google's cameras. They're going back to view the homes of their parents and their grandparents, trying to find some sense of comfort in the pictures. For example, a Twitter post by a woman named Sherry in the UK racked up over 200,000 likes when she posted this. She said, "I look at my mom's old house on Google Maps Street View, the house where I grew up, and it says, image captured May 2009. There is a light on in her bedroom. It's still her house. She is still alive. I am still visiting every few months on the train." And that's kind of heartwarming. And at the same time, I think it's a little heartbreaking. It speaks to this longing that I think we have inside of us for transcendence, for something that extends beyond this life. The writer of Ecclesiastes describes it this way. He says that he, God, has planted eternity in the human heart. And don't you feel that? Don't you feel this longing that's hard to describe, but for something that is beyond what you are experiencing? And I think especially when life gets hard and when we suffer losses, like, we long for some kind of comfort, some kind of meaning. We long for hope. We long for resurrection. And today, what I want you to know is Jesus wants to give you that hope. He is the resurrection. Today we're going to be in the book of John in the New Testament. Of course, the Gospel of John, it was written by one of Jesus' closest friends and disciples, the Apostle John. And near the end of the book, John tells us right out why he took the time to write down his own account of Jesus' life. It's found in John chapter 20, and this is what he said. He says, "But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name." Life in his name. John wrote his book so that we would understand who Jesus is and so that we could experience life in his name. And this is a life that Jesus describes as a life and a life to the full. It's a life of connection with God and with each other as we live out his purposes in this world. It's an eternal quality of life that we don't have to wait until after we die to begin experiencing. It's life in the kingdom of God, and it's available to us right now. And Jesus wants, or John wants us to tell us about Jesus so that we believe in Jesus and so that we can experience this life. It's why what John tells us in his gospel is such good news. And let's face it, most of us could use some good news right now, can't we? I mean, we've been through a lot together over these past few years. A global pandemic, economic uncertainty, political chaos, violence in our streets and around the world. And that's not even taking into account the personal hard things that so many of us are going through. Listen, obviously, I don't know what is going on in your life, but I know there are people here today who are going through some really difficult things, hard relational things, hard vocational things, hard physical things, hard financial things, hard mental and emotional things. And when life gets hard, we long for some kind of comfort. We long for some kind of meaning. We long for hope. We long for resurrection. Today, I want to tell you a story about a few people who knew what it was like to long for resurrection. It's found in the 11th chapter of John's Gospel, and it's a story about three siblings, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Now, as we get started, a little spoiler alert, it's a miraculous story in which Jesus is going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Okay, so if you haven't seen the movie, I just ruined it for you, all right? But Lazarus, what I want you to see, and what you might not know, is that Lazarus is not the only one in this story who experiences a resurrection. John starts the story this way. He says, "Now a man named Lazarus was sick, and he was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. So the sister sent word to Jesus, 'Lord, the one you love is sick.' Now Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha, they were part of Jesus' inner friendship circle. And so it's only natural that as Lazarus is sick and dying, that Mary and Martha want to send word to Jesus. No doubt, it's a subtle request for him to come and heal their brother like they'd seen him heal so many people before. But there's a curious detail in this story. We're told that Jesus waits 2 days before setting off for their home. Now, John tells us straight up that Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, so I don't think we should read indifference or callousness into this delay. The truth is that even if Jesus had left immediately, Lazarus still would have been dead by the time he arrived in Bethany, the town where these three siblings live. You see, where Jesus was at the time he received the message was a distance of about 20 miles from Bethany, considered a full day's journey by foot. And of course, Mary and Martha didn't send him a text message or an email, right? I mean, they had to send a messenger to make that day-long trek, and then Jesus waits 2 days, and then Jesus takes a day to come to Bethany. But we're told that when Jesus arrives in Bethany, that Lazarus has already been in the tomb for 4 days. See, it's likely that Lazarus died shortly after Mary and Martha sent the messenger. But even so, if you put yourself in Mary and Martha's shoes, that delay could have seemed hurtful, right? I mean, Jesus, why not come right away? Why isn't there more urgency on your part? And most of us, I think, many of us, have felt that way in our hard stuff too, haven't we? Like, Jesus, where are you? Sometimes it feels like he's not showing up when we want him to. I mean, I've experienced that. I've wondered why Jesus wasn't showing up in seasons of ministry where I've just felt overwhelmed and exhausted. Like, I've wondered, Jesus, why aren't you answering our prayers when a 38-year-old friend of mine with 4 little children got a devastating cancer diagnosis that took her life in 1.5 years? Sometimes I want to cry out, God, where are you? When I turn on the news and see more innocent children and women and men gunned down by senseless violence. If you've ever felt angry or confused or heartbroken when it seems that Jesus isn't showing up, I want you to know you're not alone. You're not alone. But Jesus hasn't forgotten you. And as we'll see in this story, there might be more at stake in a situation than we might be able to comprehend. Author James Baldwin once said, "The Lord never seems to get there when you want him, but when he arrives, he's always right on time." Well, when Jesus does finally arrive, the first person he encounters is Martha, who's gone out to meet him on the road. And Lord, Martha said to Jesus, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Now, some people hear in Martha's words an accusation and a request, and it might be, but I actually don't think it's either. You see, I see Martha's words as a declaration of her faith. Like she's saying to Jesus, like as we already talked about, it's not humanly possible for Jesus to have gotten there before Lazarus dies. And Martha would have known that. I think when she says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died," it's a statement of her belief in Jesus' power, in what would have happened, what could have happened if Jesus had been here. Despite her sorrow that Jesus wasn't there to save her brother, she still believes in his power. However, she doesn't believe it enough to be asking for a resurrection. You see, a little later in the story, Martha's going to protest when Jesus wants to roll away the stone from the tomb because of the stench of the decomposing body. Martha wasn't asking Jesus to raise her brother to life. She had no thought of a resurrection. And to me, Martha represents the type of person who engages life mostly with their head. In her head, she knows who Jesus is, and she believes in Jesus. And if you're a Martha type, you may be someone who stands firm in your knowledge and your understanding of who Jesus is, but maybe you've lost a little hope in what he can do in the trials and the tribulations that you're walking through right now. I think Martha had lost hope in her situation. Jesus says to Martha, "Your brother will rise again." And she replies, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." You see, nothing has shaken Martha's ultimate hope. But perhaps she's numbed her heart from expecting to see the goodness of God in the present. Have you ever felt that way? Like you believe in Jesus, you know your eternity is secure, but maybe you doubt that he's going to come through for you in your present situation. Like there have been times in my life when I think I fit into Martha's shoes. I tend to be someone who lives in my head, and if you're like that as well, when hard things happen, maybe like me, maybe you try to rationalize them and you think to yourself, "Hey, there's so many good things to be grateful for. Stop feeling sorry for yourself about that situation." Or maybe you try to convince yourself that everything happens for a reason. For Martha types, rather than acknowledging our emotions, we find it easier to stay rational and detached. Like, keep your expectations low. Play it safe so that your heart will be safe. Don't hope for too much. I mean, keep trusting in Jesus for your future, but maybe don't expect too much of him right now. You see, I think Jesus looked at Martha, and he knew she needed a resurrection. And I love how he responds to her in this text, because Martha is someone who tends to live in her head. He gives her a little bit of a theology lesson. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" And you see, in this powerful I am statement, Jesus meets Martha in her head to try to reach her heart. He reminds her that her belief in him is not just for her future, but is for her present. He wants her to experience life right now. He is the hope that is standing right in front of her. Now, of course, Martha is not the only sister in the story. Mary has an encounter with Jesus as well. And so picking up the story in verse 28, we're told, after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." And when Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Martha came out to meet Jesus. Jesus has to ask to see Mary. And I can't help but wonder if Mary's despair made it hard for her to even get out of bed that morning. I mean, it's not hard to imagine in the midst of her grief over the loss of her brother that she was weary and worn, and maybe she just wanted to be left alone. And maybe you've experienced a season like that personally. Maybe for some of us, we might be in a season like that right now. And if we're honest, in some ways, it took everything in us just to get up and get ready and get here this morning. There's those moments or those seasons when life just deals us horrible news, or when we experience something so devastating that we want to retreat and pull back. Maybe we feel like we don't have the energy to be around anyone. And I wonder if that was the case with Mary. But interesting enough, when Jesus calls for her, she does get up and rushes out to meet him. And then John tells us, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now, does that sound familiar? I mean, her words do, right? The same words that her sister said, the same words, but not the same response. There's a difference between Martha and Mary's actions. You see, Mary makes no attempt to put a brave face on her sorrow. When she sees Jesus, she just falls at his feet in despair. And I think when Jesus looked at Mary, he knew she needed something different than her sister Martha. To me, Martha seems to represent the type of person that's maybe a little more tender-hearted and feels things differently. If Martha's someone that lives in her head, Mary's someone that lives in her heart. And if you can relate to that, you're a person that just feels things deeply, and it's not just your own sorrows. I mean, anytime anybody that you care about or love is in pain, it cuts you to the heart. Maybe when you turn on the news and you see stories of devastation like we've seen this past week in Maui, or stories of violence or stories of people hurting, it's hard not to despair. But I think Jesus looked at Mary and knew she needed a resurrection. But I love how Jesus doesn't offer Mary theological truth like he offered Martha. What Jesus offers Mary is his tears. John describes it this way. He says, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. And Jesus wept. I wonder what it was like for Mary as she saw the tears well up in his eyes, to see that he felt what she felt, that she was seen, that he wept as she wept. But you know what? He does the same thing right alongside of you. The psalmist reminds us that the Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit. Well, as Jesus approaches the tomb of his friend Lazarus, John tells us that once again, Jesus is deeply moved. And he asks that the stone placed in front of the tomb be rolled away. But Martha, continuing to be her rational self, says to Jesus, "But Lord, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Now, my favorite translation of Martha's words comes from the good old King James Version. "Martha saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh." Well, after this exchange with Martha, the stone to the entrance of the tomb was rolled away, and Jesus looks up to the heavens, and in a loud voice, he cries out, "Lazarus, come out, and the dead man begins to stir, and he comes out of the darkness of the cave into the light of life, and there's great rejoicing. Can you imagine the celebration? Now, the irony is that the celebrating crowd has no idea that Lazarus' resurrection will lead to Jesus' death. It becomes the last straw that convinced the religious leaders that Jesus is too powerful and he has to go. But that will be tomorrow's problem. For today, there is great rejoicing. Lazarus was dead, but he's now alive. He was resurrected. But here's what I want you to know. I think Mary and Martha were resurrected that day too. For as Lazarus breathed these breaths of life, the future burst into the present. The end of time came into the middle of time. And Mary and Martha, they breathed fresh breaths of Jesus' presence, fresh breaths of Jesus' goodness, fresh breaths of Jesus' power. Jesus became not just their hope for their future, but their hope for right now. Theologian N.T. Wright says, Jesus has not just come, as we sometimes say or sing, from heaven to earth. It is equally true to say that he has come from God's future into the present, into the mess and muddle of the world we know. What Jesus said to Martha, he says to Mary, he says to Lazarus, and he says to you, and he says to me, I am the resurrection and the life. Resurrection is not just an idea. It's not just a concept. It's not just a doctrine. It is a person, and his name is Jesus. Friends, my guess is every one of us comes here today with some kind of stench of hopelessness in some area of our lives. And it stinks. You might even say it stinketh. And sometimes we laugh just to keep from crying. I mean, maybe there's a relationship in your life that feels dead, or at best is on life support. And you've done everything you know to do, but it feels hopeless. Or maybe it has to do with career or your aspirations, and you had big dreams and you put in your time and you worked hard, and still it feels like you're at a dead end. Or maybe there's some kind of lingering physical concern or financial concern, or maybe even an addiction that feels like it's slowly killing you. Friends, I don't know what you're facing in your life, but whatever it might be, I want you to know, Lazarus was dead and gone. There's nothing deader than a dead body in a tomb for 4 days. And if Lazarus was dead and gone, and Jesus can raise this dead and buried Lazarus after 4 days in the tomb, he can breathe new life into your relationship. He can bring hope to your dream. He can even renew in your body what feels like it's in rapid decay. Theologian Marianne Mai Thompson says, Lazarus represents all who are given life by the one who has and gives life. Jesus raising Lazarus to life is the climactic sign of Jesus' life-giving power, and that is our hope. I mean, life, it might not look like you thought it would. And right now, you might not feel like you want to feel. But friends, Jesus is in the business of bringing dead stuff back to life. He is the resurrection. And he is standing before you today, offering you hope, offering you himself. In fact, as I close today, I want to invite you, if you're able, if you would stand with me in this moment. And friends, I don't know what in your life feels dead right now. I don't know what things you're walking through. But my prayer is that both your head and your heart can hear the hope in Jesus' words as he says to us, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? If you're in need of a resurrection, I want to ask you just to put your hands out in front of you like this right now, in a posture of receiving. Open your heart to Jesus. If you're in need of a resurrection, just put your hands out, and I want to pray over us. I want to invite the Spirit to come. I want to invite us to set our hearts on the hope we have in Jesus. So if you're in need of a resurrection, let's go to the Father together. Father, I thank you that in this moment that you see every one of us. You know us. You love us. And Jesus, I thank you because of who you are and what you came to do, that we have hope. Lord, I pray over every person that is in need of a resurrection right now, that you would flood over them by your Spirit with an awareness of your presence with them, that they would sense your love. Lord, if what they need is for their head, I pray you would speak to them in a way they could recognize. If what they need is for their heart, I pray that they could know that you are crying alongside of them. But we come to you because we know that you are the resurrection and the life. Help us to breathe fresh breaths of your presence, fresh breaths of your goodness, fresh breaths of your power this morning. For we believe you, and we believe in you, Jesus. And it's in your powerful and holy and mighty name that we pray. Amen.